Hi everyone and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My guest this week is Boddy Nodge and we're talking about the Boomers' omissions and selections. In particular, we're going through his article that was published on the 7th of August. Boomers' omissions make no sense. No, sorry, you got it wrong. Try again. Any Boomers team for the 2019 FIBA World Cup, which does not include Mitch Creek or Deng Adel, already is flawed, particularly when the spectre of Brisbane Bullets bias looms largely over it. That's the title and blurb of Boddy's latest article. Check it out at boddynodge.com, BOTINAGY.com. Yeah, so we talk about that. We talk about who would make room for Creek and Adel. And then we also talk about Brock Modem's uninclusion, the guys who did make it and what we like and what we don't. We talked about Cadiz's selection in the squad. We talked about the rationales that Lamanis gave. And then just a little bit about how we predict they're going to go. We also talk about Adelaide's new training facility in Port Adelaide, having moved from their old training arena. And then we also talk about SBS taking on the NBL just briefly at the end. Everyone, I hope you enjoy this interview, and I will see you next time. Let's actually talk about the Adelaide thing first, the change of scenery. I read your article on that. I'd heard about it. First things first, I think the most important thing is Al Green, he's still got the on-camera chops. Did you see his comments?
Yeah, I did. Absolutely, and he's entitled to that opinion. Yeah, absolutely. It's a 50-year-old venue, the Port Adelaide Recreation Centre, and you've moved out of a purpose-built venue that the 36ers built. Mm. That club built that thing. It was part of the Basketball Association of South Australia, but they were just filling Apollo Stadium, which only took 3,000 to fill, but they were just filling it and turning so many thousands of people away that they eventually built this. It was because of the Sixers that place got built. And to move away from there, when you could have trained there from 10 till 12 till next month, because the Lightning don't start till right. September the 2nd, they could have trained there all this month. And then they could have moved to the 1-3 slot in the afternoon, and they could have stayed there. But I think this is more to do about Sixers ownership and the arena ownership right. being at loggerheads.
Right. Do you think, like, I haven't seen either stadium. Do you think it's a step back from a technical standpoint? Like, is this Port Adelaide Stadium not very nice at all, or is it okay?
Oh, no, it's just been refurbished. It's a beautiful floor.
That's
my home court. Yeah. It's a beautiful floor, and it's a three-court stadium. It's fine.
What about the asbestos really warning? Good. Is that true, or is that just BS?
No, that's out there, but that plays no part in this.
It's certainly
open. The courts, listen. Yeah. Can we have whatever, you know, an asbestos ice block to eat on a hot day? I mean, it's not like it's out and about. I mean, asbestos was used a lot before people wised up about it, the dangers of it. So they're not being exposed to that. Yeah. That's the news service on the TV trying to sort of heighten the angst.
The drama. No, it worked. It worked.
But here's the thing. The unfortunate thing was that the club gagged the players from saying
that. That looked weird. That looked really strange when Drummond was coming out. And it was like he was the Beatles coming out of Candlestick Park.
Well, but the thing about it too is they should have let him talk, because what were they going to say? The guy would have said, you know, what's it like training here? And they would have, he would have said it, and Jack McVay, who followed him out, would have said the same thing. The floor in there is great. It's a terrific gym. And that actually takes the wind right out of the story.
Yeah.
But by gagging them, it makes it look like the club doesn't want
to say anything, or there's something wrong, and they're not allowed to talk about it. Yeah, it was an odd set of circumstances. I actually, from a theatrical standpoint, I like love it. I like the idea that they're in this dusty old gym, kind of, you know, the Adelaide at this point, the 36ers are very much a team on the outer of the NBL. They've Joey Wright's, you know, Vegemite, love him or hate him. Yep. They're playing in Manila, which most people don't agree with. Their team is, you know, built on toughness. They signed their roster months ago, unlike most teams. Do you remember? Are you a wrestling fan, buddy? I think you are.
Absolutely.
Do you remember when Brett the Hitman Hart fought Shawn Michaels, and they did a little thing to camera. It was WrestleMania, and I forget which one. Could have been the Montreal Screwjob, not too sure. But
I don't think that was a WrestleMania, Montreal Screwjob.
No,
they wouldn't have had a WrestleMania.
But I remember there was a thing to camera they did where they had, like, Shawn Michaels, who was younger at that point, and he was, like, training real hard, and then they had just footage of Bret Hart, like, running in the snow, and he looked really old and strange. That's kind of what Adelaide is now. They're hitting meat hung up in the ice rack. They're running in the snow. I actually really like it from a theatrical standpoint.
Yeah, look, yeah, as you say, from a theatrical point, it looks pretty good. I don't really think there's much wrong with the team. I think it's going to be a pretty feisty, competitive team, and I'm quite looking forward to the year, but I don't personally anymore feel like they're my team. When the 36ers first became our solitary club in the NBL, which was 1985. Prior to that, we'd had two teams in, but that was when the official merger began, and the merge team began. That team, it comprised two imports, and everybody else was from South Australia.
Right.
You know, and so you now have, as a South Australian, you now have a stake in that team because you saw Mike Mackay or Scott Ninnis or David Spear or the other lesser like that particular moment back in the mid-'80s. You saw him playing junior basketball, you saw him playing state league basketball, and you followed them, and now they're repping you at the highest level, and there's a certain bond with the team. Now, when Mike Dunlap came here in 94. It all changed because, and his attitude was, and I'm not going to argue with this, it's fair enough, was that the Toronto Blue Jays had just won the MLB, and there wasn't a single player from Toronto in that team. Nonetheless, they still had a cavalcade and a drive, and the fans were out in force, etc. So, but I think what Mike was missing, like Dunlap, is that that's not really our culture. We're, you know, Americans, they send their kids off to college and they could be on the other side of the country, wherever they're attending university.
Their lives, they
see these things differently. And now, at this particular point, I don't think there's an Adelaide person, now that Majok Deng's gone to Cairns, we considered Mitch to be an Adelaide person. I mean, he's from Horsham. Really, there's no South Australian presence in the group, which, you know, okay, to the casual fan means nothing, but to the basketball supporter, you sort of go, oh, it'd be nice if we had someone from our own comp.
There's a thought to, like, you know, like switching import rules, but also maybe making a local rule where it's like you've got to have two guys from the state you're residing in. Has there ever been a conversation for stuff like that, or it just never really has needed to come up?
I don't think it's ever come up because, there's some sort of restraint of trade involved.
Yeah, I would have thought so. You're restricting the money and things people can make, and that's not what Australia does.
But you've got South Australian kids like Sam Daly that was running around with the Sydney Kings, or Peter Hooley and Sam McDaniel with the Melbourne United. Joel Spears, the son of David Spears, a Sixers championship player in 86. He's playing somewhere in Europe. You know, you sort of go, well, there are some South Australian kids around that maybe aren't your first five, but those last couple of spots, you go, well, or even development players. You know.
Training spot. Jeremy Grace has just got one.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jerry Seinfeld puts it best. Like, at this point, you're cheering for the clothes. You know, I think that's pretty fair.
There's another person I'm a fan of. You say you're a fan of wrestling, and I'm a fan of Seinfeld.
Naturally. Not training where they play. Do you think that's a big thing? Like, just from a...
No. Look, I would think most clubs don't train where they play. But that was one of the big draw cards of getting a player into Adelaide. They used to pick him up at the airport, Joe, and they'd take him straight to the powerhouse or Distinctive Homes Dome or Brentmark or the arena, whatever it was. They took him to their home venues. This is where you're going to live. And they take him down. There's other than the court and the change rooms, they had a 36ers players room, you know, pool, table, lounge, chairs, TVs. And you go, this will be your home. Between your training at 10 to 12, you can come in here and have lunch, stuff in the fridge, and there'll be Subway sandwiches and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you can put your feet up and you can come back out for your indie at 2 o'clock. You don't even have to go home. Everybody that came in from interstate or overseas their accommodations are all in that region, all around the stadium, down toward the beach.
Right.
So it was really convenient. So that gave Adelaide a distinct advantage over every other club, because I can't think of a one that
trains when they play.
Sydney
certainly don't. Perth couldn't, I wouldn't have thought. I know they don't. They train out at Perry Lakes and play at RAC Arena.
The Hawks did, went back in the days of the Snake Pit, but those are long gone.
Yeah.
And you know that United and the Phoenix, they're not going to be training at Hisense Arena. So yeah, basically, that was a huge advantage that they've now surrendered.
Yeah. What about, is this probably an overreach, but is it sort of a bit of a big day for the WNBL and sort of women, the WNBL getting sort of an equality with the men's, or not really, more of a scheduling thing there?
How do you mean?
Just because the venue has given preference to the Lightning. Is it?
Is its tenant.
It's tenant, yeah. No, that's what
yeah,
I thought.
So that's the only reason. They're the tenant there. They had 36ers and Lightning as the tenants. 36ers have moved out to the entertainment centre.
So, yeah,
now want to train independently, so you've got a tenant, you give them the priority.
That's the loyalty, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, no, I didn't think so.
But I'll tell you now, they would have happily... If they knew they could get 1 to 3 every day, they would have moved to that, and they would have given 10 to 12 to the Sixers if they'd wanted it.
Really?
I mean, there's a lot of...
You think it was a really unnecessary gauntlet? Speaking of Seinfeld again, when Larry David's like, this is the show, and we're not going to change it, and walks out, kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. And unfortunately, it's a show about nothing.
Good one. What have I got here? Let's jump to Boomers. Okay, so you've written your article.
Yep.
Read that one. My first question I have is, who would be your 12?
I would have taken out Cam Glidden. I'm sorry, I'm not a huge believer in Cam. Mm-hmm. He can come out and he can blow you off the floor. He did, but in the next game, he's a complete disappearing act. And have a look at the two semi-finals that Brisbane played against Perth. I think in one game he had 28, and the next game he was 3 of 11.
Mm.
And if you're essentially there as a scorer, look, I think there are three tiers of player that qualify for this level. There's the top tier, and that's your Ingles, Mills, yes, Dellavedova, Baines, Bogut, Simmons, Exum, Bolden probably. You know, all those guys that are playing at a higher level, even though Bogut's back with us, you know, we don't have to reiterate,
default,
he's just
yep,
been over there. So there's that top tier, and there's a second tier of guys that are like possibly going to go to the NBA or are going to go to Europe, or they're really knocking on the door of being top tier. And then there's the third tier, and these are the guys that, well, you know, they're more hopeful. And that's where I put Cam Glidden.
Yeah.
He's in that third tier. He doesn't consistently come out and blow you off the floor. He can do it. But I read an Andre Lemana's comment that, you know, he shot so well in the last training
whack,
camp.
Whack, whack, whack.
It couldn't be ignored. Well, I'm sorry. What about what's happened over the last 2-3 years?
Yeah.
Is that all going
to
be ignored?
I was about to say,
someone had a good camp. Woo.
My line was, he goes, oh, he just came out and went whack, whack, whack. And I was like, well, this isn't the Mighty Ducks, you know?
Yeah.
Quack, quack. But I thought as well, he's like, oh, the last 4 days he came out and shot it so well. I was like, well, the NBL schedule ran over 141 days, and I can show you games where he did come out and go whack, whack, whack.
Yes.
Games where he came out and laid a duck.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't rate him as any better a player than, say, Todd Blanchfield. I think Todd has got a lot to his game, and when he's rolling, he's on the threshold of that second tier, but he still isn't there. He still hasn't come out and done it week in, week out. And it blows my mind when people rabbit on about how did Goulding get in there. Well, have you watched Goulding over the last few years? He's a star, and he might be having a bad game, but he's going to still win it for you down the stretch. He's going to be MVP of a grand final series.
Yeah.
Don't let's compare Goulding to Glidden, say, or a Kadi or a Sobey. That he's in a different class. He's second tier.
And as a departure, what if he comes out, and because last year wasn't his year for whatever reason, can't comment, but if he comes out in this tournament and plays really well and then goes back to Melbourne, bringing him off the bench wouldn't be an option. For sort of a side note, but very interesting to see how that's going to play out.
Can I just say, the one thing that nobody has mentioned and about Chris Goulding is, you know what happened to him in July in the Philippines?
We got beat up?
Yeah, you know, like, I don't think he would have watched that footage terribly often, if at all, maybe once. But he was in a fetal position, and he was getting kicked and punched and beaten, and the guy with it had a chair when was jamming the chair leg in, trying to get him in his head and his neck and his, you know, he if Luke Longley doesn't arrive on that scene when he does,
trouble.
It could have been anything. Now you just said he didn't have that great a season, and you kind of, the thing that nobody accounts for at all is how did that impact on him psychologically? You know, he still got the swag, he still got the attitude, but there was something a little bit different about him last season.
And I think he just turned 30 as well, or maybe. So it's like a couple of things coming together where your perspective.
But I still rate him.
Yeah, same.
And I don't, that debate. So my 12 is. I didn't actually pick a 12 because I think it's a waste of time. There's always people throwing different options, and people saying, oh, yeah, we'll take Goulding as the backup point guard. It's like, well, he doesn't play point guard, so you don't know what you're talking about. Shut up and wait till the team gets announced. And then,
I thought that was odd, but anyway, yep.
Yeah.
So you're bringing out Glidden.
I don't take Cam. And I do take Creek. And the reason I take Creek is because it's important for all those NBL guys that Andre Lemanis constantly refers to reverentially, that they did the heavy lifting. Of all the guys that did the heavy lifting, Creek was the most outstanding. Creek was the guy who led them to the Asia Cup gold medal. Should have been in the All-Star 5 at that tournament. That's only just FIBA being the dicks they are that he wasn't, that he and Daniel Kickett both should have been in the All-Star 5. Shea Ely gets in it. Great tournament for Shea, but there's no way he had a better tournament than Mitch or Daniel Kickett. So Mitch, therefore, has already shown that, oh, wow, he's got the skill set to play internationally, which apparently we're being told over the last 24 hours he doesn't. But there you go. So now he helps right through the qualifiers. He makes himself available. He gets out there. He's a starter. He's a starter on the team. And yet his skill set isn't right for international basketball. That is self-serving bullshit. Yeah. Okay, that's all that is. And so now after that, he goes and has a very good season in the G League. He gets a couple of 10-day contracts in the NBA. Minnesota sign him for the end of that season. They bring him in early. Then they don't have a spot for him. But he's on the Summer League team. He's the face of that Summer League team. Mm. He is the leader of that team. Anybody who watched any of the games could see that. Gets him to the final. Comes back home. And it's like, if we're going to reward anybody for all the work that was done by the NBL players to get us to the World Cup, he should have been. We look at him and go, "Well, do we reward him? Has he got the game?" And from the first point, has he got the game? Yes, he has.
Yeah, that's my big thing. I just think I agree with everything you've said of terms of service, resume. I just think from an actual, we were talking about Vietnam War before. Who are you going to war with? Who's got the less doubt? Who's got the less questions? The army with the soldiers with the least amount of questions, the most amount of devotion wins, regardless of size.
And
for me, it's Mitch Creek. And that's no discredit to Cam Glidden, his game, and the person he is. But yeah.
No, none whatsoever. This has got nothing to do with Cam. Cam didn't pick himself. He didn't sit in the selection and say, hey, what about me? So I don't want this to be personal at all. I respect his game. I just don't think it's as good as Mitch's. Mm. It's a different style of game. But again, if you're saying Mitch or Nathan Sobey, I'm taking Mitch. But Andre has shown that he does like to take that third point guard. He took Damian Martin in preference to Brad Newley to Rio, and Damo really didn't have a huge role to play. He was more insurance in case Deli or Patty couldn't go. But they could for the whole tournament, so Damo was there in a backup capacity, really.
Right, yeah.
And again, that's what Sobey is likely to be, because I've watched Sobey's the best part of his career.
Yeah.
And a couple of years ago when they reached the semi-finals and got knocked out by Illawarra, that particular year Nathan Sobey was a superstar.
Yeah.
And he got all due accolades at the end of the season. He won a bunch of awards and he was terrific. Now, the following season they had Shannon Shorter here and Sobey started to have to play a bit of point guard where he'd only been playing as a shooting guard. Now he's playing a bit of point guard, and Shannon Shorter was erratic, and in actual fact it was Ramon Moore that used to come in and was the steadiest of the combo guards for Adelaide, and they go on to a grand final. But Nathan and Joey start to butt heads during the course of that season. Now, the season's just gone. He exclusively played point guard, and there are a bunch of games in the fourth quarter where, as point guard, he was a disaster.
Yeah, it just wasn't quite what it needed to be.
No. He was a very bad decision maker. And so, look, what you want is him loose on the wing, give him the ball, let him dunk over somebody's head, pull up, make a three. He's fantastic.
That's his best situation. And what bugs me about with Sobey there is it's really easy to see that. You know what I mean? It's so obvious to... You don't have to watch a... You watch one full game and you're like, oh, he just needs to be let loose on the wing. But anyway.
That's right.
Here's what Lamana said in his press conference about why he didn't select Crete. As heartbreaking as any of them, the skill sets we were looking for, the way he was going to play in this group was in that three spot. And I guess we just made a decision other guys might help us more in a way that we would benefit. He's talking about a three-point shot. Is that fair to say?
I don't think I can't think of what else he could possibly be talking about, because you've got Ingles in that spot, and then who's the backup in
Cooks?
That spot? Yeah, and I don't have a problem with Cooks. I think Cooks is a good selection. I didn't quibble about that. I might have liked to have seen Modem in the team, but again, we've got Landale who's been playing in Europe, and Cooks has been playing in Europe. It's just that you do need guys that have are a bit familiar with European basketball. We get ourselves all wound up.
It was a really bad non-included
omission.
I just thought, for a guy who you just, in a tournament, you can play all the defense in the world and everything, but at some point or another in this tournament, you just got to give it to guys who can put it in the hole and know the game and feel the game. And Modem, for me, is that guy. I really like him.
And he's a lefty, which causes us shared difficulties. Yeah, but the thing is, we get a bit excited about USA. Well, the chances are you play them once, but you're going to play Slovenia or Serbia or Lithuania or you know, you're going to play European teams. And so guys that have European experience are very important.
Mm.
And I didn't go into Modem in my story. Because I thought, well, if we're going to go for a guy with length and width and you know, three-point shooting, where's he? Well, he's on an NBA roster. He's not like Mitch even trying to get on another. He's on one.
Who would you have had?
So we would prefer Brisbane Bullets players to guys on NBA rosters?
I don't have an answer to that question. That's one for Andre the Marlins. Dang, who would you had? He would have had Glidden out, Creek in for Glidden, and then Adele in for
Sobey, but I'm not a coach that worries about having 3-point guards.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of coaches, I mean, Andre's no exception here. There's many coaches that want a 3-point guard in their 12, probably at number 12, but just to be safe, and I understand that.
Yeah.
But my attitude toward basketball, in terms of coaching, is I like to gamble. I like to take risks. I like to take chances. I want to have guys or girls that can just go out there and flat out play. And I'm less concerned about the positions.
This is a question I was going to have for you later on, definitely about like where this sits and the scale of sort of basketball. If just quickly before we go on to positions and that, with Ding, this is what Lamana said. Really excited by Ding. Looking for a little bit more experience at the highest level. Well, it's kind of like, you know, when you go for a job, when you get out of school and everyone's like, oh, we need experience. But you're like, how do I get experience if I can't get the job?
Yeah.
Behind the eight ball in terms of first touch point with the program and familiarity with the offense and defensive structures and how we play. Do you disagree with that logic, agree with that logic? What do you like about it? What do you don't?
I think that assessment is probably fair. Mm. And I guess that's where the camp... See, it's for people like Ding and Landale and Cooks. That's who the camps are important for.
Mm.
Because you're not selecting Andrew Bogut on what he does at camp or Paddy Mills on what he does at camp. That's bullshit again. Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles could say, look, I've got a sore big toe and sit out the camp. He's in the starting five. Mm. So
if Simmons had tapped someone on the shoulder and said, I've come to think of it, I'm not going to do the camp, but I'd like to be there.
Exactly. All right.
You'd be in China before you could take
it. So this is my point. So the camp isn't really for those guys. It's for these other young guys that are trying to find their way, show that they belong. So they're the ones that you're looking at. And obviously, in this instance, Dengadel didn't possibly do well enough. And you know, I can accept that.
I did agree with his logic on that. I was like, okay, maybe he saw an inconsistency that he just didn't have faith in.
Yeah, he's just out of college. You know, that I'll live with that one. But I still, you know, if you're looking at what's more important to us right now, World Cup or Tokyo Olympics? And I think most people would say Tokyo Olympics.
Mm.
Then I would have gambled on him.
Right, that logic makes sense as well. And then there's a place you could have put him and made the risk, but made it calculated. You know, he wouldn't have had to see huge minutes. You would have had cover for him to kind of muck around if we get up against a Senegal or whoever else. The positives of it, Nick Kay, Lamana said, his knowledge of the system, his ability to manipulate the offense to the advantage of his teammates, cuts in a manner that gets others open. A model Andre Lamana's likes in his four spot as a disruptive defender. I don't actually think I've heard of a better description of Nick Kay.
No, I think that's excellent, and I think that had they were, you know, you would have seen it pretty much as soon as camp started. Oh, Nick Kay's kicking butt at camp. He's this, he's that. He's wonderful. Nick Kay has been getting it done for 2 years.
Yeah,
and through the Asia Cup, through the qualifiers, through starting for Perth, winning a championship, through being All Star 5 in the NBL, he and Bogut were the 4 and 5. I think him having a camp was like cherry on top. But if he wasn't selected on what he'd done, and I feel the same about Mitch, if he wasn't selected on what he's already done, then there was something wrong. And that's why I'm still dirty on Mitch not getting selected, because you're basically saying, you guys can do the heavy lifting and then we'll reward you depending on who you play for.
I think, it's twofold as well. I think there's that, there's the sort of long service reward, and then there's also just flat-out talent, buddy. I can't... Anyway. Kadee in the selection squad, you wrote about it. You know, it was almost like Simmons out, Kadee in. And your article was called, you know, omitting Mitch Creek and Ding were avoidable. And then I think the final line was something like, you know, opens it up to Brisbane bias criticism. That, to me, when he got into the selection squad, it seemed like one of convenience. Kadee's a good player, but he's not one of the 12 best players we have. 18 in the country.
Yeah. No. And look, on the one hand, I do understand him going for Kadee because he's already been in the system. He knows the system. Yeah. He'll be able to help others, etc. He'll play a role in getting somebody else to the team. I can see that. And Simmons, if you say, well, Simmons is a point guard, we've gone like for like. Well, you haven't really. You've taken out a 6'10 versatile guy and put in a 6'1 guy. It's not really like for like beyond the fact that they play the point guard position. And I just thought, well, that's a soft option to take. If you're not really... So this is the twofold part of it. I understand it. I see the sense in it.
Yeah.
But if he's not going to make the team ultimately, why aren't you then turning to somebody that's next in line for down the track, for Tokyo or the next World Cup or the next Asia Cup? Who are we looking at? Who's next, you know, in the list?
This was my... A lot of people are like, oh, it doesn't matter. Kadee won't make it anyway. It's like, we're talking about... Australia's population is 20 million some. We're talking about 18 guys representing the country. Of course it matters. Everything matters. You don't just... That's why I was really pissed off years ago when they threw that game against Angola in the... I think it was FIBA World Cup. Was it?
It was.
You don't... I don't want to sound terrible and bash the United States, but we don't... You know, the Americans are all turning their back on the program. I don't want to be a part of it. We don't do that here. Or at least we shouldn't. You don't... You have an opportunity. You have a gift. You do the right thing at every turn, and it creates results as well as good feeling.
Yeah. And that is awesome. Look... I think when they lost that game to Angola, intentionally or otherwise, which gave them a better situation going forward, which they then lost anyway, so it made no difference. But they didn't do their reputation much good, even though European and South American teams have been doing that crap since time began. In 1980, at the Moscow Olympics, I think it was Italy, Brazil, and Australia, remember. And the only way that Australia missed out on going through the finals was if Italy and Brazil had a 7-point game. And guess what? They had a 7-point game. That wasn't contrived at all. I mean, this stuff has been going on for 30 years, and for us to sort of start doing it, it's a very un-Australian thing, but for us to do it, some would say, well, we were trying to be smart and manipulate the draw in our favour. Fair enough. But me, again, I'm taking it from my point of view, so apologies for people who have a different point of view, but my point of view is, if you start to try to manipulate results to avoid teams, you're basically telling your players, I don't think we can beat them, so we want to avoid them till the last minute. Yeah. You know, that's not a good message to be sending. I'm trying to go out there and win every game we play. That's it. Just try and win every game, and let other pieces fall where they may, depending on other people's results. You don't want to be dependent on some other result. And you don't want to try to manipulate the draw in your favour, because many times that blows up in your face.
And I think in a way it's sort of a metaphor or analogy for this selection process, where they've really been like, okay, we need a 3, we need a 4, we're looking for this, we're looking for that. Looking at the page instead of perhaps looking at, you know, what's just getting the right, just getting the best talent and sort of coaching around them and taking a risk and just getting more of a feel. They've tried to sort of manipulate things a little bit too much with some of the selections, especially the over the creek thing, where you can talk to yourself and go, oh, but it's a 3-point shot, it's not so great, you know, and you can talk yourself into making the decision that they've made, when really, you know, it's head versus gut in a way.
Yeah, look, his 3-point shot wasn't so great when he was their best player at the Asia Cup, and his 3-point shot wasn't so great during the Asia qualifiers. Mm. And here's a guy that when they went on their last weekend of Asia zone qualifiers for the World Cup, they had to go to Kazakhstan in Iran. And again, Andre gave the teams that were playing the NBL finals, he left as many of their players out of it as he could. He only took Tom Wilson from Sydney, I think. But he took Tom Wilson, he took Isaac Humphries and these sorts of players, Tim Conrad. And, you know, Mitch, as the stalwart of the program, flies in from Minnesota, you know, is there as the leader of that group against Kazakhstan and Iran. You've got to reward that kind of thing, surely.
Mm. It does seem odd. If I may, what was I going to say here? Yeah, so in your article you wrote, simply joining the Bullets does now strongly indicate you immediately have your foot in the national team door.
Well, it looks that way, doesn't it?
Certainly looks that way, yeah.
You know, and it's, look, it was a lot that would...
Yeah, I was about to say, has it seen it in the past? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it
Gorgeous
it
took a lot of Kings, yeah.
Yep, and then, you know, when Phil Smythe briefly had it, well, there were a couple of sixes that were in there. But you sort of go, okay, well, it's only Glidden and Sobey. Yeah, it's only Glidden and Sobey. And then, but prior to that, it was also Kadee. And then Hodgson went from Adelaide to Brisbane and straight into the starting 5 spot of the Australian team. You know, you go, there's more than one example, and it's not a good thing. Now, we may be completely wrong. That may not ever have happened. Mm. Andre Lemans may never have said to someone, come to me and you've got a chance to play on the national team. In fact, I find it hard even just saying that out loud to think that he ever would have said that.
I don't
know Andre pretty well.
I don't think, but as you say, it would look that way. Yeah, no, if you
it
are
absolutely
a,
does.
If you were an alien from outer space and you came down and said, okay, national coach, oh, that seems strange. You immediately jumped to that conclusion. As you said, I don't think there's any foul play to that extent or at all.
No.
In that way.
But perception is reality. Yeah. It becomes reality. And that's wrong. And so now you start to think, well, would we be better off, and this is not a go at Andre per se, but would we be better off with an independent coach such as, hey, Brett Brown. Let's go Brett Brown, okay, between you, because you've got Nick Nurse from
Canada.
He's doing Canada. So why not grab a Brett Brown and say, hey, how we'd like you to do the World Cup and the Olympics for us. Okay, is that possible? I mean, is that a road to go down, to explore? I don't know. Mm. We've got Rob Beveridge now out of
that was
coaching.
The name I was going to bring up, yeah.
And he was probably unlucky in the first instance.
Place, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was at a time when New Zealand and Perth were locked in, battling for the championship a few years in a row there, and Rob was coaching the Wildcats at that time, and New Zealand won. But I mean, there were, and I think that kind of might have been the final tipping thing. Okay, we're going to give it to Andre.
Mm.
If that was the case, it would be wrong because Perth, a couple of times they lost, they had big injuries during the playoffs, including Damian Martin. And it's no coincidence Damian Martin goes out. Cedric Jackson's the Larry Sengstock medalist.
Mm.
Like, you know. So there are other circumstances. I like Bevo. I think he's a quality coach, and I think he would do a great job coaching the national team. But I think this really shows that you can't do that. You can't be coaching an NBL team and then the national team. Up until now, I haven't really worried about it, but this one starts to sort of make me think, no, maybe it's... he's put himself in the gun here too.
Yeah.
Like if he goes over there and gets a bad result, say they don't get out of the group. Say Canada beats them and Lithuania beats them. I mean, I don't see that happening.
No.
But if that was to happen, Boy, would they come home with their tails tucked.
No, I dare say that'd be him out, Trevor in, maybe Beveridge, maybe Longley, I don't know. Here's my question. Is Lamanis' selection any indication that it's medal or bust at this World Cup? You know, where, because his selections, he's really gone like, all right, I'm going with who I know, I'm going with my guys, I'm going with my system, my way. And I hate to quote this particular individual, but it's apt. Ted Bundy, when he chose to represent himself at trial, said, at this point, what did he say? He goes, at this point, I'm going with the man I know best, and that's myself. Is there a bit of Lamanis going that, you know what, I'm going for it?
Well, if he's not going for it, he shouldn't be in the job.
Yeah, good point.
You know, so he should have been going for it at the 2014 World Cup.
Mm.
They had that little Angola hiccup, shall we say, and it cost him. And in Rio, well, I think... I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do think FIBA was dirty on Australia over what happened with Angola.
Right.
And then, funnily enough, in the last 30 seconds, when they're in a position to beat Spain, they get two heinous, incorrect calls that gift Spain a one-point win. And I sort of go, oh, geez. You know, all right, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but that looked weird. And so... You know, maybe one thing led to another, but he's got to be going for a medal every time they're a bat. What's the point of going? We're going to go there. This year we want to come fifth. No, you want to win a gold medal. If you aim for the gold and you fall a little bit short, well, you get a silver.
Mm.
You know, so that no, you know, I think every team he picks should be with that intent anyway.
Good point. Who's your starting five? Is it Bogut?
Yeah, I go with the NBA group. I go Dele at the point. Mills in the off guard. Ingles 3. Baines 4. Bogut 5.
And then what? Who's going to get the ball in the Who's going to be the big rotation? Who's going to be sort of the 8-9 guys who we're really going to see time?
I think we're going to see more of Jonah Bolden.
Yep.
I think he's definitely going to be actively involved.
Is he a very
well? Well, again, you have to look at the potential athleticism of the opposition,
right.
And if they got athletic big guys, then you might be tempted not to go Baines Bogut. You might go Baines in the centre and put Bolden in, or Bolden for Baines and leave Bogut out there. You know, there's ways he can go depending on the calibre of athleticism in the teams they play.
Mm.
I expect Canada to be quite athletic. I'm not quite so sure about Lithuania.
No. Never a huge staple of the Lithuanian game to be athletic, but
yeah. That's the first six, you know, really.
Looking at that bench, let's say Bolden does come off the bench. He's probably your first guy off the bench. Like, is Cook seeing big time? Is Goulding seeing big time? Landale?
I think Goulding's probably going to be more significant this time around,
right.
and Landale. Like I don't
this
really.
Is where I'm like Brock Modem. I went to him with confidence anyway.
Did you read that statement by the new Basketball Australia CEO Gerald Rector last week saying this will be our this is our strongest team ever?
I did hear the strongest. To be honest, I do shy away from that. Like, oh, who's better? You know, Michael Jordan or Bob Cousy.
Such a ridiculous statement before the team's even picked, because right now we can name a stronger team. Right now, if you had Ryan Brokoff and Ben Simmons available.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing
it's
about
already a stronger team.
The
so
good thing about this is you see who's out and who can come in. Like, whew, what? Medal at Tokyo. It really. Yeah, you know, I'm confident. I'm going to say that. I think the team's that good with who's not there, especially Simmons, obviously. But as you said, Brokaw, who can shoot so well. So,
I've loved Ryan from the first time I saw him. They were showing some games ahead of World Cup 2014. I think that might have been his first. And who was his kid? It might have been even before London. I can't remember now, to be honest, but I remember they were showing some warm-up games they were playing against Lithuania and a couple of other countries, and he's coming off the bench, he's just shooting the three from the corner there. I can picture it, and I'm thinking, and he's working hard defensively, and he's blocking a shot, and who is this kid? He's great. I'm a big fan of his. Now, I'm so wrapped for him, in the same way I was for Ingles, that they managed to get to to the NBA on a convoluted route, but they managed to get there, and they're going to, in the same way that Joe, he might have been, let's be honest, he might have been taken by the Jazz to be a nursemaid for Dante Exum.
Mm.
But in the what's happened is that he's become an integral part of that team.
Do you remember when Dante used to jump out of the gym with South Dragons? I remember him being so rangy athletic. He's still got, you know, length, but he doesn't jump. He used to be incredible off the floor.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. I've spoken to him about that, and he says, look, there's so many guys that are so athletic, doing so many brilliant things, I'm not going to try and put myself on
body. Let's go back to Creek. There's been rumours going around, and I don't know what weight they have, and I'm not discrediting the people who've told me them, but what I heard was two things.
Yep.
One, that he was too vocal in leadership, and that kind of put off your long stay, your big five, your guys from the NBA.
Yep.
Do you think there's any credit?
I've heard that too. I don't know what substance there is to it, but let me ask you this question.
Sure.
If you're a bit too verbal at a training session, you're a bit too vocal, do you think Andrew Bogut might say, hey, hey, shut up?
I dare say if you were being too vocal, not vocal enough, a combination of the both at any one different time, I think you would be told promptly, assertively, and definitely.
Absolutely. I think Bogey, I think Joe Ingles, hey, Luke Longley would come up and tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, son, you might have got away with that crap, when it was the lesser group, but now you're in the second tier, so pull your head in and just work hard.
And Creek wouldn't have, surely. I've never met Creek. Surely he would have come.
He's verbally active. There's no question of that. I've watched 36ers practices, and he's on the guys. He's on everybody about giving your best effort.
All right.
And if you're not, and you're on his team in a scrimmage and you weren't pulling your weight, he's going to let you know about it. And, in that build-up, that may have been really important for the boomers with some of the younger guys, but the older guys might look at him and go, hey, whippersnapper, pull your head in. Who the hell do you think you are? But I reckon that's what they would have said.
Yeah.
I don't think those guys in the starting group are shrinking violets that would have gone, ooh, we don't like
what. And then also gone, excuse me, Mr. Lamanis, we can't play with him. From even looking at them from the great distance of which I do, I don't think any of them would. It just doesn't speak to their character.
No, and like I said, Luke, Luke is a call a spade a spade guy. Yeah. I love Luke Longley, and he's going to come over and just tap on the shoulder and just say, put his finger to his mouth and say, shh.
And day one, too. And the second thing I've heard is that Creek didn't go to some sort of team meeting in preference, decided to get a tattoo instead.
He's got a new tattoo, so there's evidence of that. Some part of that story is true. He's got a new tattoo. That's definitely true.
Definitely a new tattoo, whether it came at the same time of the thing. Well, someone will have to ask him when they see him.
Look, it's interesting what comes out afterwards.
Yeah.
And you sort of, these stories start to seep, and you've heard them, I've heard them, lots of people have heard them.
Well, they're not tight-lipped at all.
Yeah. So is there some truth to them? I don't know, but as we've already discussed, I can't imagine that if he was a bit too vocal at training that one of the older guys wouldn't have just said, hey.
Again, Creek does not, again, just doesn't seem the guy who'd go, now I could go to this Boomers team meeting for an hour or so, or however long it is, and push that tattoo parlor appointment back an hour, or I could go. I just don't think he's jeopardizing the World Cup for that.
For how hard he's worked in the past 12 months to get to where he almost is, I just couldn't see him saying, yeah, look, I need a new tattoo of a heart saying mother on my bicep, and so
a cavalier with a snake around it, please.
I want some barbed wire. I can't see him doing that at the expense of possibly losing his
unless plan. He's in the middle of getting one and it runs long. As I said, someone's going to have to tap on the shoulder and ask him, and only he can confirm or deny. The thing I wanted to speak about is one quote really stood out to me when Lamanis goes, it's not an all-star team. What his exact quote was, it's not an all-star team, it's a group of skill sets that we're trying to fit together that all combine for the best outcome. That kind of stuck with me. I was like, well,
that's true.
You think that's true? You don't?
I think that is true. But I think if you're an American team, not necessarily the American team they'll put on the floor here, but generally speaking, they do put all-star teams together. They do just have a few practices. They do just go out and play a few games, and they go out and they blow everybody's brains out. So the all-star format does work if you've got the talent.
Right. But I think also, when I've heard all-star game, like when you hear all-star team, it's got a negative connotation these days because obviously the NBA one is not particularly entertaining or whatever. What I heard more was like, what I heard when we're not an all-star team was we're not picking solely on talent and resume.
Yeah.
Which to me, I was kind of like, well,
that covers your butt.
What is coaching now? I thought it was, I'm going to go and get the best 12 guys who've earned it. Not, and when I say best, I don't just mean physically talented or skills, but also character and so on and so forth, and resume. I'm going to bring them all in, and I'm going to allow professional athletes who get paid, work hard, devote their life and a decade or a decade and a half of their life to it, and see who steps up and see who steps back and see whether they can take that on.
Yes, excellent. I couldn't agree with you more.
And I just feel like it hasn't been done in this instance.
No, and that's what I'm saying. It's kind of self-serving because then you, by saying though, we want to bond skill sets. It's not an all-star team. Mm. We don't want the 12 best players in the country. We want 7 of the best players in the country and 5 that are complementary. Well, that way you can put in whoever the hell you want. Mm. You can put in your local boys if you want to. You can get it because you can say, oh, well, look, we know that this guy's more talented than that one, but we're taking that one because his skill set works. Mm. And also that way I can lure him to my club team.
It just leaves a sour taste in my mouth.
Why wouldn't you take the tour? It cracked me up. I do a flashback thing at my blog where I sort of get old programs out. And I just the other week I found a program from a national invitation tournament that was played in New South Wales back in the 60s. And they picked an all-star team of 10 from this tournament. These were all the best clubs in Australia, St Kilda's and Melbourne Churches and West Adelaide's and Parratel's and Sydney YMCA. And all. They all played in this tournament. So afterwards, they pick an all-star 10. But the MVP, they went for the MVP of the tournament. It was a three-way tie. So fantastic. There was 3 guys that jointly won the MVP. And then they picked a first and second 5 for the all-star team. The 3 guys that won the MVP didn't make the all-star 10.
What? I don't understand.
Yeah, you go. We're saying you were the 3 best guys in the tournament, but you've already got your accolade. So we're going to give 10. You know, instead of just giving 7 other guys an accolade, we're going to give 10 other guys. Mm. It was a very weird thing to see. You go, okay, that's unusual, and it was a bit the same with the NBL in 1979. I think Ken Richardson wins the MVP, but he's not All-Star 5.
Yeah, and you've seen it a few times in the NBA where they've had sort of, you know, finals MVP to losing teams, or guys on a losing team, things like that. Jerry West stands out as one. Going back to the Boomers things, I just feel like, it's a little bit of ego coming in, like, oh, my system will carry us through. And I don't know about you, buddy, I've played a bit of sports here and there. I feel like coaches, I'm kind of like, I appreciate you bringing the team together and running the training and everything, but when the ball gets in someone's hand and they're shooting the shot and, you know, maybe they're running off a system you've designed, but it's 99.9% player, and it's starting to bug me the fingerprints of coaches getting on this sort of stuff.
Yep. Well, I have to agree with you with that. I know you can say, look, we're not picking the 12 best players, and that can be true to a point, because what if 6 of your best players are all 7-footers? All 7-foot centres.
Yeah.
Say, no, they're not 4 or 5, but they're just centres. Well, you can't take
all of them. That's true.
So there is scope for that to be a correct thing, that we're not picking out necessarily our 12 best. Mm. But you should be picking your 12 best 4 positions. And if you need positions, if you really need positions. The modern game is changing.
Well, here's what that's what this was leading to, position basketball. When he was like, oh, well, what we need from the 3 and what we need from the 4, I was like, what you need is, if we're in a close game, guys who hit shots. And in start of the game, guys who play defense from dot zero to the 40-minute mark.
Yep. I mean, honestly, when I started in the game, this is how long ago it was, when I started in the game, the best team in South Australia was West Adelaide. They had four players that were outstanding, and then they would plonk a centre in the middle of them. They would get an American centre, be it a Bill Stewart, a Bob Smith, a Don Atherton, Ken Richardson. It's West Adelaide that I'm talking about. So West Adelaide had two guards, Alan Hughes and Glenn Marsland. Glenn was an Olympian. And they had two forwards, Werner Lind, who's probably the best shooter I've ever seen, and Roger King. And those four guys were the constant as West won, you know, a bunch of championships. I think they were in 19 consecutive grand finals, and they were, and it was only ever the centre that changed. Now, if you said to me, was Glenn Marsland the point guard or the off guard, or was Alan Hughes the point guard or the off guard, I couldn't tell you because they were just the guards. Mm. They brought the ball up. Was Werner Lind a small forward? Well, he must have been, because he's only about 6 foot one, 6 foot two, so he must have been the small forward. Was Roger King a power forward? Well, he's only 6 foot three. So, no, these are just two guys that could shoot the ball. They could certainly shoot the ball. And now, if someone from the guard group went out, well, Werner could swing back to guard. Mm. It was like they weren't playing real, other than the centre, they weren't really playing position basketball back then. And then the game became more and more refined, and now you are a small forward and a power forward and an off guard.
When did because I Googled it, like, when did positions first come into the game? I actually couldn't find an answer on the internet. I was a fleeting sort of Google search, but when does that sort of come about?
I reckon it's come about in the mid to late 70s, because up until then it was two guards, two forwards in the centre, and then suddenly there was an adjective in front of the guard and an adjective in front of the forward that changed everything. And now it was really important to fit the power forward mould and the small forward, and if you didn't fit the mould, you were a bit odd, like Charles Barkley. What are you doing at 6 foot four playing, imagining you're 6 foot six and playing against guys that are 6 foot ten in the power forward spot? Well, it's just because he was a bloody good basketball player.
I've watched Title Town and Golden Era, but the one I actually sat down last night and only watched three quarters of it. I actually fell asleep, but it wasn't because of the lack of entertainment. I watched the 76ers for the first time. They were playing Brisbane Game 2. Is that 86 or 87?
Yep.
One of the two.
In 85, Brisbane won the final. It was a one-off grand final. In 86, it was first best of three.
Adelaide.
So you played away home. So they won the away game in Brisbane in overtime, and then they lost the second game and won the third game.
So I'm watching that second game would be in Adelaide, and they lost it. Yes. Brisbane kind of got up to a good point. That game is helter-skelter. It's end-to-end. It's really entertaining. It's certainly basketball of its time. But it doesn't. I don't think that's a game and a style that sits in isolation in 1986. I think a lot of it translates over. It was a lot faster than I had anticipated, and it was good to watch. And I just feel like and what we were getting about position basketball, you had seemingly all guys of a relative same height doing a whole bunch of things and shooting and passing and dribbling, all doing it. And I've spoken to Ken, and that's very much his style. What I have written on my diary here is, are we seeing a repeat of Lindsay Gaze and Barry Barnes? With sort of,
the system?
Just system first, players second, when it should be the opposite.
Well, it should be the opposite. And I think we have to grow a little bit. You know, we really have to grow a little bit and start to recognise if we've got all these sorts of disparate talents, how do we get the best out of that? Not, I've got a system and I'm going to just bang in the square pegs into the round hole, and if I can't bang it, I'll just discard it and find another round peg, even though it's not as good. You know, I think it's the Sydney Kings lately that have been talking about being more fluid as a group and less position.
Funnily enough,
Well,
Sydney have obviously got DeSean Tate, they're four through two are almost all the same guys, type of guys. Brisbane are also another one. They've got Singler, Patterson, Braun. You know, they haven't got that typical banging, bruising, rebounding power forward. But I'm sorry, buddy, you were saying?
No. It's just interesting to me that we're sort of seeming to be evolving in a particular way that is at odds with the way our boomers have been selected.
Yeah, I agree. I just feel like, hopefully, I'm really hoping Simmons is the guy who just cracks that conversation wide open.
Yep.
Big guy who can handle and pass and can't shoot or doesn't like to shoot or whatever way you want to phrase that, and it not matter. I think that's what I'm most excited to see with, well, with them.
I love coaches who look at what the talent is and then take advantage of the talent.
That's not Pat Riley. I've got my diary here. Pat Riley is, for me, the best coach who's ever lived.
Well, I love Don Nelson. Back in his, when he was coaching the Milwaukee Bucks back in the days of Sidney Moncrief and Bob Lanier.
Marquise
and
Johnson.
That particular group, that he played them a certain way. He had the great point guard, the great off guard, the small forward, power forward, the center. So he played them that way. So now fast forward, he goes to Golden State, and it's the run TMC thing where okay, now I've got smaller guys. I've got I can't remember half of Marcelinus, Mullins, and Hardaway. I'm going to play a different style of basketball,
yeah.
And he just adapted to what he didn't try to run them whatever system he had, yeah, in Milwaukee. I loved watching Don Nelson teams play because he was trying to maximize the talent, what he could get out of the talent, not what he could get out of his system.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because I think Pat Riley for me is that guy,
right?
Los Angeles. Run and gun. New York, yep, they're beating people up. Miami, right, they're kind of like, we're going to get guys who are, you know, former stars, but they've still got something. We're going to get something out of them. Weird team, that Heat team that won with Shaq.
Yep.
I think we've seen where before it was very much the big game. No, we got to have a big guy, even if it's someone who's not particularly good. Now it's sort of become the D'Antoni thing where he's got his system, but it's the opposite of what it used to be. It's a pace and space 3-point shooting system, and you now plug into that system. So it's sort of the system has changed its objective, but the thought process around it is still the same of, we're going to plug guys into this system, and if you can't shoot 3-pointers, you can't play basketball.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's another one. There's a train of thinking that it's, you're either going to hit a three or you're going to play in the paint.
Yeah. What do you think?
If you don't have a mid-range game, you're not going to be successful. You need a mid-range game. You know, you get a good jump shooter, jeez, and you go, oh, no, don't shoot that. Only shoot a layup or a three. You're kidding yourself.
Yeah, it's just not. And that we're going back to, what was it? That for me is Modem. That guy who can score in those positions. He's a bit of a better shooter than, from around that out of the keyway area. But yeah, I mean,
and he's tough. He's tough. He doesn't take a lot of crap.
He's massive. Have you seen the guy? He's massive.
He played in Adelaide for a season.
Yeah. And he was amazing.
And he was getting into people's faces and opposition and trying to roust them up. And, yeah, and he had a bit of, what do they call it, piss and wind?
Piss and vinegar.
Yeah, piss and vinegar, there you go.
Tell me this, though. With when you're going into a tournament, what are you looking for? Like, what's going to win you a FIBA World Cup, in your opinion? You know, you've got 40 minutes to play with. It's a certain style, it's a certain way, from a play style or from a selection thing. What do you think is most important?
Look, obviously defensively, that sort of goes without saying, but you still have to say, they have to be very competent defensively and have to have some defensive systems in place,
uh-huh,
where you can, you know, we like to press full court, three quarter court, half court. We like to keep you guessing as to what we're doing defensively, right. You know, and I think that's a really good formula. But the really important ingredient in winning a tournament is to win your first game. You can't stress how important, yeah, that is, to win that first game.
And how do you win that one?
Well, they're going to play Canada, so they get a good look at Canada. They get to play them twice. I think both teams will hold stuff back, obviously, but they get to have a look at Canada play the USA as well, and I think they're also playing New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken. So you get a few looks at them. There's not a lot of secrets on a basketball court. So there's not much they can hide. And then you've got to have a strategy, but you don't sacrifice your own strength for that strategy. You don't go, oh, look, we've got to worry about this guy because he does A, B, and C, and you fill your team up with all this analysis and preparation, and that to me is the main of the insecure coach. They want you to have every possible piece of information,
yeah,
and it's analysis to paralysis. You can't play in the end because you're trying to think of, oh, what's he doing when he gets the ball and he fakes left? He goes left. He doesn't go right. You go, oh, no, that's the other guy. Oh, well, but the guy scored on me and I fouled him. And, you know, like you just mess your players up. What you have to do is give them an outline and give them the scout and then have confidence in them. Push what their strengths are. So what are Australia's strengths? We're mongrels defensively. Delhi sets the tone.
Delhi, Bogut.
Yep. We want to get after you.
I was going to say Nick Kay. I was going to say Crete, but no.
Yeah, and then you break. You break, and you're good on the run. You need to be good on the run. And then when it comes down to winning a championship or winning a tournament, you're going to have a really competent half-court game. Now, any time you've got smart players like Ingles and Bogut on the floor, you've got a hell of an advantage. So you want to try and keep them out there as much as you can. I don't know how much Bogut can play at. Yeah. How many minutes he can play over a tournament, like when you're playing back-to-back, that's going to be significant. But that's what I'd be, your main focus is to know your opponent, but know yourself better, and know what you have to do then to be successful. Yeah. Come out, work their tails off defensively, run them into the ground, and have a good, strong half-court set where you go to your strengths. Yeah. Not your system, you go to your strengths. Right. Now, when Barry Barnes is running the shuffle in 2000 and is taking Luke Longley out to the wing, you're going, this is nonsense.
Yeah. Is that one of your favourite words, Bonnie? Nonsense? I see it come up a lot. Do you have a favourite
word? Yeah, because my mum used to get mad at me if I used shit.
Oh, okay, sure. Makes sense.
She said, you're more articulate than that, so don't.
Right.
Yeah.
Nonsense. And that, would that be your favourite word, or you don't have one?
No, I don't have one. No? I do have a favourite word, it's yes.
Yes, okay. Yeah, that's a good answer to give. That's a very sort of entertaining. Me, it's mischievous. Like there the way it sounds, like the way it feels.
Yes.
And it's meaning as well, so it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, the shuffle and that scene. I was supposed to say Jingles. He's kind of done. He's shot poorly in the last couple of international campaigns. What do you put that down to, or if anything?
I think knowing Joe a little bit. I mean, I don't know him as well as I did when he was here. More, I haven't had much to do with him now that I'm retired. But back before that, always happy to see him. Always happy to talk to him. And knowing the sort of guy he is and the amount he cares, I think I really suspect that in Rio he put a lot of pressure on himself.
Right.
To perform well, and I think he kind of overthunk it, for want of a better word. He was overthinking things, and he was second-guessing himself a little bit, because he had done so well in Beijing. He and Paddy in Beijing showed where the future, and then in London, they were two of the most outstanding players in the tournament, and then you go on to Rio, and you think, okay, here's where they're really going to be at the top, and Paddy was, but I think Joey put a lot of pressure on himself. And I think, that laid-back, laconic air that he presents, that's who he has to be to get the best out of himself. If he's too intense, and you can see that intensity
that's not
his strength. Yeah, yeah. He is intense. Don't get me wrong. He's very intense, but he's got to show that intensity through a kind of a laconic...
A veneer.
Way he goes, about it. Like, I'm pretty relaxed. I'm hitting the three. I'm grinning at you. I'm saying a few words. That's Joey at his best. That's Joey driving Paul George crazy, wanting to punch him up.
That makes sense.
But in Rio, it was like, oh, damn, I missed another shot. There was that kind of, everything was so important. I don't think at any time during the tournament, I'm a long way away, but it didn't look like anyone addressed that with him and sort of allowed him to pull back and relax. And, mate, you're in the Olympics. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing. If I was in this team, I'd say, listen, guys, this is a tournament. It's run by FIBA. Who's FIBA? We don't like... What have FIBA done for us? We're playing in their tournament. They should be happy we're here. I'd have a very arrogant approach to the FIBA World Cup. I'd say... Gold, but is it actually made of gold?
Don't believe it when they bite it because there's chocolate on the inside. Don't buy that stuff. that's just for show. Everybody does that. You watch, they win a medal, they'll all be putting it in their mouth.
It's actual gold.
Mate, it's a gold medal that's bronze.
I thought it was just gold. I thought it was just painted. Honestly, I didn't know they gave out actual gold. I'd be getting a replica, and I'd be down at the jewelers before you could say Tokyo 2020.
Now the thing also too, that it comes with instructions, with the cleaning instructions.
Yeah, because gold is temperamental.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
There you go. There's a revelation, too, for listeners, that the gold, silver, bronze medals are actually made out of those components. They're not wood.
I just thought they were. I've seen the design of them. Anyway, I'm actually, you know, that is a piece of trivia that I'm actually keen to hear. Yeah, I think that's pretty much Boomer's covered. I don't think there's much else to really touch
on. Oh, look, I hope they go great.
Of course.
I think the guys that I'm criticising come out and play fantastic, as they obviously must have, to sort of get ahead of the people that I think should have been there. And I hope they come home with a gold medal. Absolutely. I mean, Barracca from every inch of the way. And when Cam Glidden takes his first three, I want him to go in. I don't want him to miss. Mm. You know, but, you know, that's that. You know, we've all entitled to opinion. I think I feel that Mitch Creek has been wronged,
right,
for want of a better way of
doing it. You feel a real injustice.
Yeah.
I a lot of people feel the same. Yeah, he's shut down all, you know, contacts. Twitter, social media. He's gotten rid of all of it. I don't know what his odds for NBL MVP are. I just feel like he's going to come out like a madman, and I'm putting long money on him for sure.
I had a little exchange with him on the phone today.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, he's gutted.
Oh, of course he would be. Mm. Yeah, I can't imagine doing all that work, and also work in the qualifiers, work in the United States, and then come back and blindsided as well. Like no one really saw it coming at all.
No.
Yeah, no, brutal. The other thing I wanted to talk about was where is it? Oh yeah, SBS. SBS, ESPN. You wrote about it. I read your article. The deal's pretty good, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think any time you're on free-to-air, there have been the naysayers that said, oh, the SBS of all the networks to be on. But it doesn't matter. It's free-to-air.
Yeah.
You can see it. You can turn on your TV and you can see basketball. You don't have to pay for it. Yeah. So stop bitching and moaning and be happy. And I hope what it also does is lead us away from some of the Fox footy commentators that we have to put up with doing the basketball. And maybe we can get some people that have a clue. Yeah.
I've said this before. Like you go to medical school and you don't come out and you're a oncologist, podiatrist, dentist, you know, you don't come out across all fields. You specialise, you know, and commentary, I think, viewers and certainly basketball fans in this country, they've just matured to a point where you got to specialise. Just me?
No, I can't handle Dwayne Russell. He's just over the top nonsense. There it is.
There's that word again.
Now you know which word you should be substituting.
Oh, yeah, true.
and just to carry on, and then the anecdotal stuff he gives that is personal and insensitive. I can't handle that. And Anthony Hudson, I'm not a big fan of, because I think he's a football commentator.
Yeah, and there's no shame
in, they don't really know what they're doing. They don't really know what they're looking for. You know, there was one game where, I'm not going to mention the particular Fox footy guy, but he says, you know, Perth is up by three, Melbourne down by three. And he turns to one of the colour guys and says, which team would you rather be right now? I'm like, well, there's a minute to go. I'd rather be three up. I mean, is really? Is that a question?
Yeah, I was particularly shocked. I think it was the Brisbane series where it was just, I mean, it was well decided. It was an under 10 end, but there was just like, what can we talk about? And there was no sort of, you look at this game, you know, a little bit more scientific, analytical discussion was needed. I think actually, a guy does some really good stats work on Twitter. I think it's Duncan Berg. I think he's a coach somewhere in Victoria. He made the point, and I was like, that's exactly what should happen, because those last couple of minutes I was doing some ironing. I wasn't really paying attention. Who would be your dream commentary, like who's guys who you like and want to see more often?
I don't know much about, I wouldn't want to name people just now, but what I would say is I like a lot of the commentary on NBA and NCAA games, and you'll usually find that there's the anchor, the guy that's actually calling the game, who knows something about the game. And then one of the, if they have two extras, one of them is a coach.
A coach, a anchor, and then who's the third?
Well, the third can be a player.
Yeah.
You know, but so, I mean, I don't know. I've heard Chris Anstey a couple of times, and I think he's got some potential because he's actually prepared to say something.
Well, that's, he is.
And I like that about Mark Worthington.
Yeah, for sure.
He's going to say something. He's not going to, you know, he's going to say that Majok Deng doesn't want to play a lick of defense. Yeah. He just wants to block a shot. Okay, well, that's the truth.
Yeah.
And, I like hearing that. I like people that are going to actually say something, not those that want to maintain great friendships with all the players and don't want to, you know, annoy anybody because, I said this about you during the call. I hope you don't mind. It's like just people that are going to be analytical. And, honestly, I think there's a small place for the colour guy and your basketball expert or the anchor and the colour guy to sort of talk a bit about their careers. But, oh, my God. You know, is it tiresome on the Fox stuff about here and how many times somebody shot 61 points in Townsville or how many times this happened or when I was. God, I hate that stuff. Yeah. If that stuff doesn't happen naturally, organically, just in the call, or, you know, remember when you did that, exactly that same thing, you fell over and the ball hits you in the face, yeah, we have a bit of a laugh, something, but that's what you were saying a bit before, when the Brisbane Perth series is decided and you want some analysis, something to hang on to, now it's just going to degenerate into chatting about respective careers and what I did and what he did. And then that phony self-deprecating stuff that you hear from some of them. Well, you know, they don't really feel that way about themselves. They're a bit high on themselves, but they're going to say, oh, yeah, no, I could never dunk the ball, but, you know, this sort of stuff. Yeah, I find all that stuff really tedious. I just want... Yeah. Just tell me what's going on. This is what I don't know if we've had this conversation before, but that's what I hate about footy commentary, AFL commentary, that there's so many people... Now we're getting Nick Riewoldt and these guys that are recently retired into the call, and they can actually tell you what's going on. Because a lot of the Brian Taylors of this world are from a different era and don't even understand football of today, which is a copy of basketball where everyone's going forward and everyone's going back. Football has a fast break now, which it never used to have because you used to play in lines, you know, the back line, the halfback line, the middle line. You know, and that's where Brian Taylor's from, and a lot of his cohorts are from that era. So when a team kicks 7-0 in the first quarter, and then in the second, by halftime, the other team's ahead, they can't tell you what happened.
Yeah.
You can see it, and if you don't understand the sport intimately, you don't know how that's happened. That's where you need an analyst that's telling you and tell you what it is, how they're cutting off the team from coming in, how they're coming down the middle of the ground now, and they're going down the corridor, not to, you know, give us an explanation. And a Riewoldt, Bob Murphy, those sorts of guys,
they can
do that. Yeah. Now, get back to the basketball commentary, and again, mainly the people that are going to be able to do that for you quickly are coaches. Mm. You know, I Rob Beveridge, get him on the commentary.
In fact, was there... I don't think... There was a single coach who appeared in the commentary of an NBL game last season. Give me 2 seconds. Not an NBL coach.
I think Chris Anstey got a couple, but then there would be people who'd debate, you know, how much...
He did it in the second half of the season.
No. But there was sort of a debate as to whether he was more a coach or a player.
Yeah, true.
But I think he did bring some coaching analysis. You know, Andrew Gaze will probably be back, and Andrew brings a requisite amount of enthusiasm and buffoonery,
sure.
and you can like that or hate that, whatever.
I enjoy it. I think he's good.
Yeah, but he's not there talking about himself.
No. I think Gaze is a good voice for the sport. Tell me about the move to ESPN. I think I saw it and instantly thought, oh, this is great. It's just brand, it's brand alignment, you know? You walk down a supermarket and the milk is next to the cheese, next to the dairy, you know? It makes sense. And Fox Sports, I always felt the NBL was a tack on. I didn't feel it was a good match. I didn't think it took a great amount of care with the product.
You thought they were lactose intolerant.
Ah, that's colour commentary right there. I love that. what do you think? Do you think the same?
I agree. I think that Larry Kissam did a great job for basketball to get every game on television.
Yeah.
That was an extraordinary achievement. And to do that, I know it cost him a pretty penny. And there were compromises made along the way.
They paid
for it. Oh, yeah. Well, they're not getting paid for broadcast rights. Don't you worry. If the NBL was someone was paying to broadcast the NBL, we would be, as a sport, all across it, they'd be saying, hey, they're paying, you know, $100 million to get the basketball. Isn't happening. It's the other way around. But that, and look, he's making that investment, and more power to him. Love the guy for doing that. But yeah, in terms of what sort of promotion did they do on the network in terms of just what's coming up in NBL basketball, you'd get the NBA coming at you and the NCAA, and even on ESPN, I think it's ESPN that does the EuroLeague as well, or one of them does. Anyway, you'd get that, but you didn't get a lot of cross-pollination with NBL. So, yeah, I think if we're going to SBS and to ESPN, that these are good things. I mean, SBS is renowned as the soccer broadcaster, so it's already familiar with doing a sport. And ESPN, well, that is sport. So, yeah, and the chance for the US to pick some of that stuff up is phenomenal, and I'm sure that's driven by LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton's arrivals on our scene for
that
sure.
That was certainly, one lens to the other. I think with the whole SBS thing, you know what's the only sad fact of it all is? Imagine if Les Murray had the chance to become the voice of basketball in Australia on SBS.
Les Murray.
A great Australian-Hungarian. I think he was born in Hungary.
Yeah, he was.
I was looking. Have you met? Did you meet
him? I didn't know him, but my parents knew him well. Lars Ulliger.
I was about to ask his pronunciation. That's a hell of a name. That's something there. He was a singer. He sung on a cruise ship, I think. Hungarian refugee.
The refugee stories are phenomenal.
Out of Hungary or just refugee?
For me it's Hungary specifically, but I've got a friend who's Polish who's got similar sort of stories. Yeah. So I don't think it's particularly just any one ethnicity, but the ones I know obviously are the Hungarian ones, and they're phenomenal stories of what people did and have done to sort of get out here and how they survived and then how they went from survive to thrive. You know, and suddenly you've got millionaires, you know, and
Kesselman's one.
It's
Ukrainian. His parents were born. I think he's born here. I'm not too certain, but
no, Larry. I reckon he was born overseas because he's just got that hint of an accent.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah,
you know, Les Murray's one of my favourites. That was very sad, but he would have been a very interesting one to pick up. He would have been a very interesting accent for basketball to acquire. You know, basketball sort of picked up an American accent, an Australian one, and to pick up a Hungarian one would have been his particular would have been fantastic, I think.
He was a good man. Good man, and he was wonderful for soccer. And it's a pity basketball hasn't had that sort of coverage over that.
No, it doesn't have that champion. Here's a question. Serious. This is a serious question. If SBS tapped you on the shoulder and said, "We'd like to have the sports writers on TV. Would you like to commentate a game or something like that? Would you do it?"
I'd have to give it a lot of thought because the discipline I'm from is completely different. You know, like when I watched a game of basketball to report on it, I would have a notepad out and I would just run every play. Basically, I was just doing every play so that
you could reference back
immediately. But also, I often didn't need to hit my notes because I just knew it because I could remember it because I'd done it. You know, and so that. And actually talking about a game and watching it, and that's a different discipline. I used to be able to, back in the day on Channel 10, I used to be the courtside reporter, which was easy because I just sat next to the team. They did the call. I had a little button. I pressed the button when I had something to say. They'd come to me. I'd say it, and then I'd get back to taking my notes. And then if I'd know something in my notes, then I'd press the button again. So that was okay. But I don't know. I'd be intrigued. I'd probably give it a punt just to see how I go, and if it went all right, then happy, I might stick with it. But I'm also at the point in my life where I'm just content to go and watch a game, not have a notepad. It was weird for the first year, let me tell you.
Yeah, no, I bet I can understand that totally.
And then being able to yell out.
Yeah, well, I find it hard to not be a fan. I just get too absorbed in everything, but. I really take I don't know how guys sit there and take notes and write and things.
I yelled out at a ref, "You bald-headed flog."
There you go.
And she was not very impressed.
And that was the Boomers Selection and Omission episode with Body Naj. I hope you enjoyed it, and stay tuned for more NBL Pocket Podcasts in the future, traditionally every Tuesday. See ya.